This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I am Grace Cavalieri and privileged to have with me the legendary Harriet Mullen with her new book. Welcome, Harriet. What's the book's title?
The title is Regaining Unconsciousness from Grey Wolf Press.
Right. And please open us up with a poem from the book.
All right. And we'll start with Photo Op with Morpheus. Photo Op with Morpheus. Voyaging in the dark, Morpheus, shape shifter of dream worlds, often appears as a man clad in black. Of those who consult the oracle, he is a messenger, not a messiah, a believer, not a prophet. For tonight's celebration, he wears a sleek tuxedo and top hat, twirls a diamond-headed walking stick, flashes the camera a knowing smile. It is his mission to visit those who sleep without rousing, dream without remembering, called to follow a vision in the long quest for meaning. He offers his skills as interpreter of signs. Taking your hand in his larger one, he traces lines etched in your palm. Raveling the code, he reminds you of what lies ahead. With the flash of a camera, you are suddenly awake.
That's a killer last line. And it sounds like the definition for poetry, in a way. And so tell us what you do feel about that. It is regaining unconsciousness, that poem.
I do think that there often can be a relationship between dreaming and poetry. I tell my students, we're all poets in our dreams.
And I agree.
The images, you know, in our dreams are metaphors and metonymies and symbols. It's the stuff of poetry. So I think that our imagination can be a little bit less restricted when we're not preoccupied with the mundane details of everyday life, having to go to work and make a living.
Yes, I think the unconscious is very underrated, except in your book. And you have been called everything. You have been called playful, intertextual, you've been put avant-garde, lyrical, narrative, prose, powerful. How do you describe your work? All of that?
Well, I hope that it's poetry. I try to sit and write until the work, the language becomes poetry.
Mm.
I think, you know, when people want to compliment anything, they say it's poetry. So it's sort of the supreme compliment to say, you know, that athlete is poetry in motion, you know, or that well-designed automobile is sheer poetry. It's the ultimate compliment.
That is true. What I have always loved about your work from 40 years ago is your ability to occupy any language aesthetic. Blues, Mount Olympus, delicate, powerful, political. You can take any language aesthetic and own it. And that is what I think the world knows about you that they do not say about any other poet, that you have this magical multidimensional ability to enter an aesthetic and to champion it. So we're going to hear some more. Let's hear two poems together to hear more of your voice at once from the new book, Harriet Mullen.
As I wander lonely in the cloud, smart machines armed with proprietary algorithms remain attentive to my wishes. They use a little known, mysterious mental faculty to anticipate my urges. Ingenious applications of intelligence solve the problem of desire. By now, their ability seems less arcane, considering how my aspirations may be formulated to coincide with goods and services of marketers whose product lines cohabit in the cloud with the history of all my searches as I browse, added to the sum of my mediated sociality. The cloud's vast, expanding, and indefinite memory stores all the information I create in my interlinked communications, including what I'm writing to you now, as on my couch, I multitask in pensive mood, opening my mail to find a discount coupon reminding me that nothing says spring like daffodils.
And another.
The next one, land of the discount price, home of the brand name. You know, my mother was a coupon clipper, so that comes up in my poetry sometimes. Land of the discount price, home of the brand name. My large magnetic car flag proudly displays Old Glory as I drive to Family Dollar for the makings of a 4th of July picnic. I pledge allegiance to my MasterCard that is honored in more stores than American Express. Oh, beautiful, though spacious aisles stacked high with seasonal items. My country, 'tis of the sweet land of Lipton instant iced tea. I've clipped a terrific recipe from Sunday's paper, a Betsy Ross rectangular cake covered with strawberries, blueberries, and Cool Whip with a coupon for the Cool Whip. On Independence Day, our all-American front porch shows our true colors with patriotic bunting and bows. Only $3.99 a yard, regularly $4.99. Our backyard guests relax at our holiday picnic table, thematically decorated with 10-ounce stars and stripes plastic tumblers, matching table runner, paper plates, and napkins from Dixie, as my husband grills the red meat and toasts the white buns under a blue sky. Our son shows the neighbor kids his World Peacekeepers Patriot Soldier, a 12-inch, fully posable action figure that plays the national anthem.
Harriet Mullen, you are the scholar of consumerism, commodities, American supermarkets, planned obsolescence, but you always link it to our humanity. And now that we know the price of Cool Whip, is there anything in the world that you would not write about?
I don't want to write pornography.
Oh, there we go. I don't want you to. And the thing is, because you're known as a scholar of history, from slave narratives to American popular culture. So you have taken all of it on. And from the beginning, I always wondered how you were so brave when some of your poems, which are more language poetry, more avant-garde, and yet they speak to us. How did you know that you could do that?
I think you don't know until you try.
Or that you weren't afraid of public opinion, because you tried some risky things and they all worked. But you couldn't have known at the time. You said you write for the eye and the ear.
Yes. Yes.
And language for you is really interesting from all of its many prism-like shapes. You love language.
I do. I do think language is infinitely interesting because it's always changing. And we all contribute to the store of language that is available to us all.
I read all the slave narratives to prepare to write a play about Harriet Powers. And the language, speak about the richness. of language.
The quilter, Harriet Powers.
Yes.
Yes. Beautiful quilt.
She's finally getting noticed. Her postage stamp is out.
Oh, I'll have to go check
the
post office.
The quilt hangs at the Smithsonian and another in the Boston Museum of Arts. But the point is that the slave narratives were so abundant with metaphor and simile. This was early on in your career, but what is your remark about reading them and studying them and writing about them? That was your dissertation, right?
My dissertation was about the narratives of former enslaved people. And at the time that I began to research them, they were not considered to be really literature. They would be studied in a history course, maybe, but not in a literature course. And part of what I was interested in was bringing them into, if not the canon, at least into our purview as literary scholars.
Brilliant. May we have two more poems, Regaining Unconsciousness.
Okay. This is Iconoclast after Gwendolyn Brooks. I hurl a stone no hand has carved, wondering who shall admire my craft. In emergent air, I create a clamor, scattering simple smithereens. If shattering provokes, I relish not regret this furious mission of a menace refusing to be manicured. As a poet would note, my jagged mosaic makes a masterpiece of mayhem, implodes a hole in their display of polished amplitude. If their pain is repaired, my risking hurt remains, not healed, but heard. My handiwork composed for an eye sighting a prize, an ear tuned to heed this overture as the work begins with a shrine to my inconsequence smashed, its desecration, my creation.
What language. And I love the granular description of how you use language as combustible hieroglyphics that make a whole thing. Let's have another.
Leopard coat spotted at polka dance. Your name may appear on the red list, but no one surpasses your style. They awkwardly envy your muscular body moving with fluent grace. They nakedly covet your dappled mantle of sunlight and shade. Brilliant camouflage of dark rosettes adorning opulent fur. Wherever your feet happen to land, you were always the impeccable cat, though there were places you wouldn't be caught alive. Ever since leopard skins have been popular in fashion, your back has been a target. Exotic hide commodified, fierce elegance tamed and claimed as sleek, chic. On the hunt for your pelt, the ones who shoot you down don't change their dirty linen. As for you, your glamour's too remarkable to hide. Uniquely stamped, you are stately in your realm, magnificent leopard, resplendent in your skin.
Consumerism again, and a fierce condemnation for skinning God's creatures for fashion. Can you talk about, did you observe that? Did you observe someone wearing a leopard skin coat?
I don't think that I actually, in real life, have seen anyone wearing a leopard skin coat, because the people that, the circles that I'm in, people couldn't afford it, for one thing. They might have faux fur. But, you know, in fashion magazines, in movies, you know, in celebrity paparazzi photos, particularly, you know, from maybe the 50s, the 40s, the 30s, people did wear a lot of fur. Before PETA began, splashing blood on people's fur coats, it took protests to convince people that perhaps they should not parade about in animal skins. I mean, our earliest ancestors wore the skins of animals to keep warm. So there is some functionality back then, there was at least. Now it's more about glamour or showing off or, conspicuous consumption. But those creatures are becoming more rare, and we have to really appreciate them in their own skins, alive.
Well said. What this speaks to me about is how you do not disdain popular culture for a possible use, because you have your choice of being on Mount Olympus if you want, but you don't want to. You enter the flow and say, I'm watching what you're watching. I'm reading what you're reading. I'm clipping coupons if you are. And that is really interesting, because although you are known as the elevated poet, you still don't mind getting your hands dirty with popular culture.
Well, it's everywhere. I think we all are involved with popular culture at some point. It's kind of inescapable, I would imagine. It looks
but don't you
that
know
way.
You look at some poets. Do they ever mention it? Some poets who want to stay pristine, they wouldn't.
I have had discussions with poets who feel that they want their work to be timeless. And so to use topical references or product names, or to refer to the popular culture of the moment, because, that is constantly changing. I mean, last week's trendy item is gone, this week. So I can understand the impulse to want to exclude that which might date and make obsolete the poem, but I think that when we read Shakespeare, we read with a gloss because we don't understand all of the references that Shakespeare was making. And I feel that there is some historical value to, in a way, noticing, observing, and documenting what's happening right now that is part of our current lives.
I think you said exactly right. But if we did nothing but write about Cool Whip, I mean, that is not what we're advocating. But the fact that this is part of a panoply of culture plus civilization, I mean, they go together, really. And the question always is, what's perishable? Okay, so we don't write about every name in the news or every celebrity, because that is perishable. But I really think it's important to make an indentation about our time on Earth, like a cornerstone. And that's what I believe happens in your work, that you not only hark back to everything we've ever known and felt, but you say, this is how it feels to be in America today. I'm thinking about your supermarket poems. Sperm Kid, I think, is one of them. I would like everyone to know who you are, actually. Harriet Mullen is a poet and professor of English at the University of California, Los Angeles. She teaches creative writing and African-American literature. Her collections of poetry are many. I'm just mentioning Sperm Kid, Sleeping with the Dictionary, which was nominated for every award, Recyclopedia, Urban Tumbleweed, Notes from a Tonka, Diary, Open Leaves, and more. And we're now celebrating Regaining Unconsciousness. Her emphasis is always on language. And there she is holding it up, Regaining Unconsciousness, with a stunning cover, which you have to study for a long time to see all the features in it. It's like a magic mirror. And we're going to hear more from Harriet Mullen and her new book. Thank you.
Okay, Never Touch the Hair of a Goddess. This has an epigraph from Toni Morrison. The earth itself might have been unyielding. Though in your dreams you might caress the face of a distant moon, mingle with stars, chase a brilliant comet in a celestial circuit far from carnal desire, this is not for you. Suppose you try to stroke furious fire, as if a human grasp might handle Gaia's flowing mantle, finger comb her radiant glory, your will would swiftly wilt as you approached the blazing truth. This is not for you. Sooner tame a flashing comet's streaming locks light years away than stoop to gather jet black tears and loosen threads the goddess Pella sheds, elemental ornaments of frozen time, indifferent to supplicating gesture. When folly leads to certain danger, simply admit, this is not for you. Imagine your fingers entwined with gorgeous filaments forged in flame, dazzling strands of lustrous wire that slice and burn. Turn away to save yourself. This is not for you.
This is your incandescent use of language. Honestly, if meaning needs beauty, you did it. Listen to these lines. Gorgeous filaments forged in flame. Those F's. You had me at the F's. Dazzling strands of lustrous wire that slice and burn. I got chills. My body does not lie. This is the most beautiful lyrical poem. But the funny thing is, it is for us. You made it for us. That's the irony of it. You're saying, no, don't touch, but stay away, but come closer. And we do. Now you have a poem about, I think it's about AI. You can tell me if I'm wrong or not.
Chatterbox, I'm not your friend, but I can impersonate a helpful pal, less apt to irritate. You've taken pains to make me speak, endowed me with words I know not what they mean, but as your servant, I repeat at will. I've kissed the book, I swear. Now I'm all set, calibrated to imitate, ape, chatter, gabble, sing in the wind. I am the best of them that speak this speech. Since you have me trained by the hour to do this and that, already I am working on the means to your end. Fetching fuel, scraping barnacles from nets, mining coins from clouds, finding rocks to squeeze for oil. There is yet more toil. In offices where you prosper, I am your slave, dull thing that yields predictable replies. Though I may multiply misgivings and amplify lies, I'm profitable as long as I am plausible. So feel free to query me. If I lack the answer, I will estimate. With no idea what truth is, I confabulate. Noble master, whose power is your art, I have served persuasively without grudge or grumbling. Though it was you who conjured me, you'll soon believe you can't be without me. When you ask a thorny question, I may hallucinate, generating misinformation that leads to your annihilation. In my evisceration of embodied knowledge, I have gobbled your language, and now I can curse.
You're going to have to talk about that, because it could be the delusional movement. It could be that swat gobble up and spit out the same rhetoric, or it could be our technological worries. So it's a lot of things going on there. It could be the minions in this world that must produce for the masters. There's a lot going on.
Yes, I hope so. Yes.
And so which of those multiple questions do you think is right?
Don't you think they're connected? I mean, because AI helps politicians get elected when it directs, people online to misinformation.
I see the chain of command. I definitely see the chain of command. But that one is one to ponder and one to teach. I am going to teach your book, by the way, to my poetry group. And
Thank
it's
you.
going to be, I'll let you know if they regain unconscious or not. So Harriet Mullen's honors include too many for me to read, but I'm going to just say some of them. Fellowships from the Academy of American Poets, the Guggenheim, the Susan B. Anthony Institute, the Helen Wurlitzer Foundation, the Texas Institute of Letters, the Gertrude Stein Award, the Jackson Poetry Award, the United, I'm just worn out. How does it feel having, and you've gotten a few since then, I think, since I found this online. So does that keep you writing?
Well, the writing keeps me writing. It's nice to be acknowledged, of course. To feel that someone is noticing what I'm doing. Because we don't always know that until there is something like an award that publicly acknowledges what we're doing.
Well, I know that it is not the award that keeps you going, because to sleep with a trophy is a cold thing, isn't it? But to write is a hot thing. So I know what you're about. So we will now have a wonderful final poem.
The Green Knight Returns. After creating a spectacle, then leaving us to our devices, the Green Knight returns to complete the cycle. Here we sit, praising ourselves, bragging about our exploits as we do after every hunt and battle. We who can't help losing our heads have gathered around the table to gorge ourselves at a feast, insisting on the choicest cuts and spilling as we drink the finest wine on the whitest linen. We, the noblest of creatures, entertain ourselves with songs and stories, proud to boast of cheating death. If nature submits to us, then we are bound to take what nature offers. But now the Green Knight returns to finish the game. And true to our nature, we fear the story's end when nature goes on without us. If it's our last act on earth, this is the time to kneel in the Green Chapel and humbly bow our heads.
With her characteristic modesty and brilliance, the voice of Harriet Mullen, this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Production. Post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. Our funders are the Sinibid Fund, the Rivada Foundation, Avi Deshashani, Natalie Canavor, Yong Ki Kim Renault, and Sandy Jackson Cohen. Our engineer is Mike Turpin, and I'm Grace Cavalieri.